Recording in progress.
Vice Chair Wick, would you like to test your mic? Can you hear me? Can't hear you very well.
Alice? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Don't you ever go home?
No. I have a cot right under my desk.
I thought so.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm leaving 77.
Oh, okay.
So do you want me to come by the budget meeting?
If you want to, you can. You don't have to.
Alice, you're not on mute.
I'd like to call to order the November 3rd, 2022 meeting of the Tacoma Civil Service Board. May we have the roll call, please?
Board Member Sexton? Not present. Chair Hansen?
Present.
Board Member Klein?
Present.
Board Member Wick?
Present.
And
Deputy City Attorney Jennifer Taylor?
Present.
Roll call is complete.
Okay, and board member Heller is on vacation out of the country, so she's excused from the meeting. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes, and do you have any corrections? I do have one correction that was pointed out to me by Ms. Hobson, and on the second page of the minutes where it says, well, refers to the motion as to where we're going to hold the meetings in the future, and where it says a voice vote was taken, and that's in all caps on page 2. It's the original minutes said 2 ayes, and that should be 3 ayes. So that was changed by Ms. Hobson. So do we have any other corrections?
No, Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed? Okay. The first item on our agenda, and let me get that here, is communication for information. The board is going to hold a study session on the topic of residency immediately following this meeting. Actions on matters still pending, new business. So we have a new meeting location and effective December 1st of 2022. Our meetings are going to be moved to the conference room of 243, which is 243. That's located on the second floor. And I think we're going to try that out. And if for some reason that doesn't work, we can always come back here. So we'll give that a shot. Consideration of matters set for public hearing with regard to the appeal of Joseph Harris. Mr. Harris has withdrawn his appeal, so that matter has been concluded. A civil service coordinator report?
I do not have a report this evening.
Okay. Human resource director report.
Good evening, Chair Hansen and members of the Civil Service Board. I'm Shelby Fritz, Human Resources Director, and I'm here to provide you with my report this evening. I'll keep it brief since we have a study session immediately following this. The only topic I wanted to update you on is our classification and compensation study for non-represented positions. I'm pleased to say that we are getting closer to implementation of the study. Our consultants are now reviewing feedback from city leaders on the allocations of positions to their new classifications. Once the allocations are finalized, we will begin our implementation process, which involves a lot of behind-the-scenes work and communication with employees. Our projected effective date for the new system is January 2nd, 2023. I would be happy to answer any questions from the board.
I don't have any questions at this time. Board Member Klein? Okay. Board Member Witt?
I'm good.
Does that conclude your report, Ms. Fritz?
It concludes my report.
Thank okay. you. Comments by the public? Any members of the public would like to give a comment? Well, at this time, we can adjourn the meeting and then move directly into the study session. And I was thinking, you know, there's no requirement that we have any particular procedure during a study session. And I think it would be a lot more conducive to discussion if we dispense with the formalities of Chair Hansen or whatever and just go ahead and talk. Whoever wants to talk, just go ahead and talk. And that way we can start brainstorming some ideas. But I think it's going to be the discussion will be really stilted if we try to have the maintain those formalities. So let's just have kind of a free form discussion here. And I just wanted to start off with, I gave a little background for board member Klein and board member Wick about this issue. And the city charter, and let me read that to you. I just got a copy of it here before the meeting. It provides that, this is section 6.3, it provides no person shall be eligible to employment in the classified service who is not a resident of the city at the time of appointment. And all officers and employees of the city appointed after this charter takes effect shall reside within its corporate limits during that their period of employment in the city service. And our attorney, Jennifer Taylor, has done quite a bit of research on this subject and tells me that with regard to the requirement to maintain residence in the city limits after you were initially hired, I think the courts have examined that and held that may be unconstitutional as a violation of right to travel or something along those lines.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Your recollection of our previous discussions on this issue are correct. The charter requires that they have to be resident at time of appointment, which is in a sense the day that they are appointed as city employees or hired by the city. But yes, the subsequent law and decisional cases have indicated narrowing. You cannot terminate people for moving out of the required area. You can't lay them off in order of resident preference. So because of, as you indicated, you have an interstate right to travel or free travel under the Constitution, amongst other reasons. So,
okay. So there was a blanket waiver for quite a period of time. And then we took another look at it, decided that we wanted to lift that blanket waiver and reinstate the residency requirement. Right before we did that, or right after we did that, we had the COVID pandemic, and there was an emergency order which lifted our decision to maintain the residency requirement. And that emergency order was lifted by the mayor, I believe, on October 10th of 2022. And so it reinstated our residency requirement. And then Ms. Fritz talked to us about the issues that she was having obtaining applicants for employment during this period of time. And she tells us that it's been quite competitive. So we decided to reinstate the blanket waiver of the residency pending our determination of what we want to do. And that's the history of it. And this issue was before the voters in 2014. And the voters were asked to decide whether or not they want to maintain the residency requirement, and they agreed to do so by a 67% majority. So we have that. But I'd like to give Ms. Fritz an opportunity to explain her issues that she's having with the residency requirement and why it may not be a good requirement for the city of Tacoma. So, Ms. Fritz, if you'd like to go ahead with that.
We're really doing good with being informal, aren't we? So, first, I gave you some information, and I'm sorry, Corey, or Chair Wick, Board Member Wick, I didn't realize you weren't going to be in person. But it includes some data on... it's data that I have shared with the board in the past that really covers our employee demographics, where they lived at the time they applied at the city and where they live now. And we can go through that. But the bottom line is our recruitment market is not the city of Tacoma. It's been Pierce County more broadly, in particular, some King County as well. So the majority of applicants that we get are from sort of the broader area. And at least I'd say for the last couple years, especially in the last year, we've had a really hard time recruiting a diverse pool of applicants. that is qualified and can meet the requirements of the classified positions that we have open. The competition with other public sector agencies and even private has gotten pretty fierce. We've had to do all kinds of creative things in order to try to attract people to come to the city of Tacoma. I don't have the data with me, unfortunately, but our applicant pool counts have dropped significantly, especially for positions that we usually see really large pools, like office assistant or, in our department, human resources assistant. I'd say they've at least been cut in half in the last couple of years. So we're spending more time and effort, particularly in the city of Tacoma limits, doing outreach and recruitment. But what we're finding is that if we're going to be successful in recruitments and finding really great candidates, we're having to go even nationally in some cases. And in IT, even the majority of the applicants we get are international. And so it's even bigger than Pierce County, the state of Washington, and the city of Tacoma. So those are the challenges some of the challenges that we're having with that. I think regardless of what we do around this topic, we should really consider eliminating the requirement altogether. It doesn't mean that we still don't have room to consider a preference program or something like that, but I can't see the residency requirement ever being something that we want for the good of the city and applications we receive and getting good people to come work for us. I don't see having a residency requirement in the form that it is right now is ever going to be something that's successful or helpful towards meeting that goal. So regardless of what we do, I'd like to see us consider either eliminating or modifying that provision of the charter. Okay. That's some background for you. If you have any other questions, let me know.
Sorry, Ms. Taylor, did you want to give a, I guess we're trying to be informal, so I'll go with Jennifer. I'll go back to Jennifer, yeah. Jennifer, would you like to give a background on your research on this issue?
Sure, thank you. And I did provide you with a confidential memorandum that I provided to board members in the past when I was still the full-time advisor. You're right that the residency requirement was on the ballot in 2014. Just a little bit of background about the current state of 6.3 of the charter. Previously, in 1992, there was a charter amendment put before the people that was a request to eliminate citizenship as a condition to city employment. Voters were not asked in 1992 to address the residency aspect. Now, that amendment to the charter did not pass. So we know that the voters rejected the idea that Tacoma employees should not be Tacoma or U.S. citizens. In 2004, the current iteration of Charter Provision 6.3 was passed because previously it had also prohibited city employees from holding offices, for example, serving on the library board or the Metro Parks board or other boards that serve the community. So in 2014, the most recent charter review, because as you're aware, I believe it's in every 10 years, there's that process. The voters were asked again to look at 6.3 and again asked to eliminate citizenship and residency. There was no breaking apart of those two different characteristics. So to what extent we know what the voters' intent was regarding residency specifically versus citizenship, it's an unknown since the question was all one in the 2014 process. But as you indicated previously, even though it requires somebody to be a resident on day of appointment, case law says you cannot make it as a continuing condition of employment thereafter. So it's a one-day requirement that really is almost an artificial type of enforcement. That's been the crux of the research that I have found under the current state of the case law. So.
And then there's the statutory exceptions for police and fire?
Yes, there's actual specific RCW provisions that prohibit any kind of residency requirement for firefighters and police. So, and that's a separate provision as well.
And I put that information in the packet I gave you in case you want to see what the exact language says.
Okay. So I think we can just go ahead and just start our discussion. Board Member Klein and Board Member Wick, would you like to start, or I could start, or
I'm happy. I
go ahead. What's that?
He said I'm happy.
Oh, okay.
I feel like an echo in the room. I think I mentioned this last meeting. I am not a fan of this residency requirement at all. I think it's completely outdated. I think it is not very inclusive. The housing prices in Tacoma have gone through the roof. We expect folks in general to move here for a job. Verges on ridiculous. I think that we're in the day and age where it shouldn't matter where you live, if you're the qualified person for the job, best, applicant for the position. So I recognize the voters to uphold it, but I don't think the right thing for the community.
I have a suggestion, and maybe you've already done it. If you have, you've muted your chamber's mics. Thank you.
It was challenging to just say all of that because all I could hear was me echoing. So I hope it came across okay. I don't know if you can hear us, but we can't hear you.
So you have police and fire who would also doesn't apply to. So in some way you have a situation where a certain segment of our employment base applies to them, but not
correct
to so many others. And it seemed historically when the city needed a position, like I would say in the 40s and 50s, why did the city need a biologist? Well, over time with environmental science and the fish hatcheries with the utilities, started adding biologists. We probably have dozens and dozens of them today. I'm assuming they're unclassified. But in that period when they started, well, that was the way in order to be able to facilitate getting a biologist to come here was being able to come up with broader type of criteria, I guess, to recruit and choose who is the best qualified. So one of the things that means a lot to me, besides all the other things that are mentioned, is the fact that classified positions are singled out here. And I'm trying to understand, they're just as important as all of the other, but they're as important as police and fire and unclassified. And I just think to have an impediment in one category of employee just doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Shelby, but doesn't the residency requirement apply to unclassified, and then the council decided to institute a blanket waiver for them?
That's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. That was me. Yes, and I just wanted to add to that. The blanket waiver has been in effect for the unclassified service since 1989 with a single three-year gap. So okay. For nearly 35 years, so more than 30 years, it has not been in effect for the unclassified service, which is about, I believe, a third of the city's employment workforce. And as Board Member Klein has pointed out, because state law prohibits the requirement for police and fire, and that is also a large, significant portion of the city's workforce. You are correct that it really does impact a smaller portion of the workforce. It does not apply to everybody in the city at this point.
Okay. If we did have the requirement, then we've got a couple of issues. And that one is that when you're hiring for a highly technical position, and I used last time the example of an electrical engineer, that Board Member Klein, I'm sure you know a lot of them. And for those kinds of positions, it's almost required to have a waiver, because if you limited the pool to City of Tacoma residents, you just would not have enough applicants. So that just would absolutely not work. The other issue is if we had the residency requirement, we have the issue of the infrequency of our meetings and your need to inform applicants on a timely basis that they've been accepted for the position. Otherwise, you're going to lose that applicant if they are applying for other positions, and it's a highly sought after type of, job mm-hmm. that they're doing. So that would require us to have at least probably bi-monthly meetings. Conceivably, I guess one, given that we have the hybrid option at this point, we could have a Zoom meeting for those waiver issues in the middle of the month. Sure. You know, and I know that this has caused nothing but problems for Ms. Fritz's department. And I know this is a very emotional issue, and I know that some of the unions also have very strong feelings about this as well. Maybe they can't, I don't know. So, but then my thinking is that, you know, the voters had this issue before them, and they voted overwhelmingly to retain this residency requirement. Yes.
Sorry, I feel like I'm in Zoom, putting on. Anyway, what I wanted to mention was your example of the engineer, but I'll use IT, an IT position, because they're represented or classified. And so we're in the position where we can't even wait a day to give somebody an offer. There are companies like Amazon who are not even interviewing people or requiring applications. They're doing creative things to basically hire them on the spot. So in a lot of respects, especially in IT, we're competing with that. So adding another step to the already complicated, as we've discussed, recruitment process for a classified position is I think letting a lot of good candidates potentially get away from us as well.
And Director Fritz, I would second that. Well, certainly it's a challenge to find electrical engineers. In the last several years of my career in the energy industry, the hardest position to find was a line electrician. I mean, we were scouring the country to try to find people that would be willing to come work. So engineers are great, but you don't need engineers if you don't have the system up and operating. So,
yeah. And we're in that category. I mean, we're the competition's like California.
Yeah. Well, and as Alice would know, I think it goes down through the meter techs, people work in the transformer shop, all those kinds of highly technical positions that are still in the classified ranks are all a challenge to fill those positions.
Chair Hansen?
I was thinking.
Chair Hansen?
Yes.
Alice has her hand up.
Oh, Alice, go ahead. Sorry.
Great. Thank you very much. And just to chime in with Steve, he's absolutely correct. And I think if you look, Tacoma Power had to make significant wage increases during this last contract to maintain employees. And one of the reasons was we had five line electricians that actually put in resignations to go work at some of the smaller mutuals right in Pierce County. So that's very true. But there's kind of another twist to this that managers may not recognize it, but I've been around enough that I know what's going on. It is so cumbersome to hire through the civil service process that they will hire non-classified positions to do work because it's easier to do it that way. And what my beef with that is, it is basically skimming unionized work over into non-unionized positions. And then we have to fight about it. And I've had managers tell me we're doing it because it's easier to hire this way. So there's actually kind of two problems here. One is unfair. We're a regional hiring. All companies hire regionally now. They don't hire just locally. People commute to work. We got people in Seattle that are working down here in Tacoma and vice versa. Residency requirements are obsolete. They don't work. I lived in the city of Tacoma when I first got hired, and after my probation, I moved to Fredrickson. So that was about a year after I was employed. The other issue is that's obsolete, but then it's also how is the hiring practice affecting the way the city offers, accepts, and recruits people into positions? And it's not only happening with line electricians or skilled trades, but you've got a turnover in HR, you have a turnover in clerical, there's a turnover in customer service, and the employees at the city of Tacoma they're starting to burn out. So I imagine you could see that I'm not a big proponent of residency, especially the way this one is written. It's written very poorly. Thank you.
And I know I've looked briefly at the hiring process and the charter and some of the personnel rules regarding hiring for classified positions, and it does appear to be extremely cumbersome. And I think that's one of the things we might be working on. And I think there are, you know, the charter does mention tests, but it doesn't require, as far as I could tell, written tests in every instance. And so I think that's a problem. And then we've got these lists that last for a year. And if you've got an IT person calling a year after they took a test, you're going to say, sorry. So that's something that we're going to be working on when we take a review of the personnel rules, but that's a very astute comment. And also the issue of perhaps putting too many people in the unclassified positions, we're still going to get to that. But we've got all this other stuff to do right now as well. But another alternative would be, I'm sorry. I'm not used to this. I'm trying to get used to this Zoom thing. So I'm very sorry, Board Member Wick. Let me shut up and then I'll transfer it over to you.
I wanted to say that I'm in agreement with Alice's comments as well. And while, yes, the voters in 2014 approved this, I think as the attorney in the room stated, it wasn't a clear one specific thing they were voting on. They lumped citizenship and residency in one question. So to say it was overwhelmingly approved, I don't know that it was actually clear to the voters. The other piece is, so they live there day one, and day two they can move away. Like, we're not having residency police about if you're staying in Tacoma, and it just seems beyond ridiculous that, you know, day one live here and you can have the job, but day two not. Again, from a retention perspective, a recruiting perspective, it's so limiting. Even from 2014 when they voted on it, we're in a very different world. We're seeing huge reductions in quantities of applicants across the board, regardless of you know, what the position is. And so I don't know what the process is to remove this out of the charter. I don't know that a permanent, you know, since 1989, unclassified people don't have to be. Police and fire don't have to be. Again, it seems so non-inclusive to not bring the classified folks into that same group. It's, sorry, hang on, Peanut. I'll be right there. Okay. Sorry. I have my little boy here. and so I don't know. I mean, I feel like we can talk all around this. And I would like to actually know what it takes to change it.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. Board Member Wick, this is Jennifer Taylor from the City Attorney's Office again. Just to chime in and respond to your question, there are really two ways to proceed. You either can get this on before the voters on the next charter review cycle, which I believe would be in 2024, or depending on however the board ultimately decides to go, the board could just, the present blanket waiver that was reinstated, I will tell you, I don't know whether there's a sunset date on that or not, but you could also just have another blanket waiver be in place for an extended period of time. Certainly that's what the city council has done for the unclassified service. So I hope that helps answer your questions in terms of if the board were to support that. Those are the two methods by which it could be done, one or the other. Thank you.
Could this board, rather than just continuing a blanket waiver, could we ask the city council to include classified in their current permanent blanket waiver of unclassified?
This board has the authority over the classified service. And so you have the specific authority to when it is in the best interest of the city to waive that requirement. And that provision is your authority that's specifically under the municipal code. So I don't think that you could ask the council to apply their waiver to the classified. I know that when during the 1997-2000 period, that three-year period, when the council rescinded its blanket waiver, it asked the board to do the same for the classified service. So in answer to your question, no, I don't believe that is something that the council could do. Again, it would have to be through the charter review process from the voters or just continuing the blanket waiver for the classified service.
But Board Member, we're going more informed. Let me read this provision to you. It does. So that I already read the first part. It says no person shall be eligible to employment in the classified service who is not a resident of the city of Tacoma at the time of appointment. Then it goes on to state, provided, and this is the city charter I'm reading from, provided that the civil service board may waive such residence requirements for employees in the classified service, and the city council may waive such residence requirements for appointed employees in the unclassified service when such waiver is deemed to be in the best interest of the city for such reasons and under such conditions as may be prescribed in the personnel rules. So, yeah, only we have the authority to waive this for the classified service by the terms of the city charter. And we do, Jennifer, we do have a sunset provision on this, and it was for 6 months or sooner if we make a decision before the 6 month period. But anyway, I mean, I think another issue that we have that was, I believe, suggested by board member Heller was to use a point preference system. And I'm not sure how that would work. And is there a way to go through a brief description of your hiring process? I know it's, it can be pretty complicated, but is there, do we have time to do that? Or you want to, I just wanted to get a general handle on your hiring process to see how that point preference system might fit into that hiring process.
Sorry, my button doesn't seem to be working. So I won't go through the whole thing because I, as you mentioned, it is a lengthy process in its current form. But what if we were to implement a preference point system, how we would do that is much like what we do for veterans who apply at the city. So they get a certain number, and it's based on percentages for veterans. They get a certain number of points based on those percentages added to their application before the list is established. So what happens, people apply, and this is, I'm shortening this, people apply, they take a test of some kind as required by the municipal code. They're scored on that test, and that gives them a rank in a list. And that's what we would call an eligibility list. Before that list is established, which means it's reviewed and certified by an HR professional, veterans' preference points are applied. It's required by federal law. The minimum number of points a veteran can get is 3.5. So at that same period, we could potentially add another point or something in, I'd say we should keep it below the veterans' preference minimum points because that's a federal thing and also they're veterans. But we could add points for being a Tacoma resident at that stage as well. And so what that would look like is, say you've got a whole bunch of people on a list. They all have scores. So let's say 1 to 100. And so you've got candidates that are 99, 98, 97, maybe 95, their scores. If we added a residency preference point, that would bump up Tacoma residents by 1 point. So the person who has 99 points would go to 100, and then maybe you'd still have 98, 97, then 95, that person's a resident, so they'd go up to 96. So it would give them a little bit of a boost on the eligibility list and be kind of added at the same time as veterans' preference. That is the cleanest way that, and I didn't introduce my colleague, Cheryl Beidelman. She's over the Talent Solutions Department, which is recruitment and all the civil service hiring. That is the way, probably the cleanest way that we talked about doing it with her team, who are the classified staff who actually administer this whole system. And you've got some hands up there too.
Who's next on the Zoom? Corey?
Yeah, again, I go here to simply because you can afford to live in Tacoma or move to Tacoma for a day. How is that deserving of extra points? I mean, that whether you live in Spanaway or whether you live in Tacoma or Puyallup or Thurston County, why does it change your value as an employee of whether you live in the city of Tacoma potentially for one day? That doesn't make sense to me.
No comment? The only thing I would say in response to that would be, it would be a way to, and that, you know, I think you're saying that the voters really haven't indicated a preference. And I think we have I kind of disagree with that, but, you know, we all have differences of opinion. And I think that would be a way to consider what the voters voted on in 2014, if we had a point system. My way of thinking is we should continue with a residency requirement. I know that that's just my opinion. And unfortunately, Dan and Amy are not here. I think Amy had been talking about a point preference system. We need to resolve that and ultimately vote on it. But Ms. Fritz, go ahead.
I think Alice was before me.
I was asking for Alice, and I don't know if she heard me. Did you hear me, Alice?
I couldn't get to my mute button fast enough. So I got a couple things. One is board member Wicks beat me to the punch there. But it's more of. I guess I'm coming from the angle of who's going to check to make sure that I live in the city of Tacoma when you give me those points. I mean, is a PO box acceptable for proof of residency? So that's something to think about. Number two is most of your promotional tests now are open and promotional. So I'm a City of Tacoma widget maker, and I'm going for the widget maker 2. And because I'm a City of Tacoma employee for 10 years, I've moved out to Frederickson. And now there's somebody off the street that is getting an extra point when that requirement doesn't apply to me because I'm already a City of Tacoma employee. How would you work? I'm just being devil's advocate here. I don't know how that would work. It almost feels like you're penalizing current employees. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alice, for bringing up that point. Ms. Fritz, can you address that?
Yeah, it wouldn't apply during promotional exams, the residency requirements, only when you're first becoming an employee for the city. The piece I wanted to kind of second was board member Wicks mentioned briefly of affordability in the city of Tacoma. I don't know if you've taken a look at home prices lately, but I have an employee in my department that makes a very good wage, and I couldn't even, I was trying to help her find a place to rent, and there weren't places available under $2,000 a month for a one bedroom. So I think my worry is for the people who were trying to attract to the classified staff positions, a lot of those positions are, I'd say, under $100,000 a year. I'd say most of them are. And finding even a place to rent in a safe area in Tacoma, I think is a little bit of a challenge right now. So just another consideration as well.
If I may, Chair Hansen, just when we're talking about residency preferences, I want to just remind the board while we're talking about this that it's not just saying, okay, we're going to do a residency preference. There actually has to be a rational relationship to a legitimate policy goal. And it's we have to ensure that any kind of residency preference point system does not have a disparate impact. That will render it unconstitutional. So as I've advised in the past, you know, if that's something that the city is going to do, it needs to be based on quantifiable evidence as to why the preference point system for residents would be put into place. Again, right. And that loops back to what we're talking about, you know, people have a right to live where they want. There's always going to be a risk of a constitutional challenge potentially. And that's why it's fair, you know, because they're going to be looking at, does a point system have a disparate impact? So just food for thought. And also, you know, that's some of the legal framework against which a preference point system for residents would have to be examined.
Yeah, that might potentially be a violation of Title VII if there's as well as the Washington law against discrimination, if there's a disparate impact. Now, I was wondering, and I mentioned this at our meeting on Monday or Tuesday about the tests that are given, whether or not there's ever been an issue of whether or not the testing has a disparate impact, but that's something we can talk about later. But I know that the rational relation test is a fairly differential standard of review. So I think if we could come up with some, if there is a reason for using it, we should certainly verbalize that reason and have it part of the record. But one thing I wanted to ask you just to follow up on Alice's comment is, I think she left. So if an individual, say they're working in the water treatment plant and they've been going to school for IT and they decide, well, gee, I want to go into the IT department, that would not necessarily be a promotional. So that would be a whole new position. So what would happen there if the individual was living in Frederickson and the other individual or some of the other individuals who are applying for that position were City of Tacoma residents, would those new individuals have a preference, and then the current employee would not have a preference?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's certainly something to consider.
I can tell you, last time we had this discussion, I did some research on legitimate government interest and what that could be. It feels a little squishy to me, so I'd love your opinion. This was an article put out by IPMA HR, which is our professional association for public sector HR. Some of the reasons that you could have, like, preference points that have a legitimate government interest are enhancing the quality of performance. They think that those who live in the community have more invested in the community, therefore making conscious decisions. It might increase the likelihood of interacting with community officials and citizens. This is the one that gives me heartburn. Minimizes absenteeism and tardiness. They say it could have potential economic benefits and tax exemption purposes. So those were the reasons they could come up with in this article for a legitimate government interest.
And I know that the city's been gentrified over the years. Certainly it has since I moved here. I think I moved here in 79, and it's quite a different place than it was back then. Yeah.
Another factor that the board may want to consider is, you know, because we're talking about stated policy goals of the city, you know, I realize I'm just stepping in tonight, but as I've said in the past, coordinating an effort, or at least bringing the city council who are setting the policy for the city, is something that the board may want to consider. Because if you're going to be just, you know, I have to take off just attorney, but I'm also counselor hat. So this is something, you know, you may have to look at maybe, you know, at least opening a dialogue with the city council as they are the policy setting body. Is a residency preference going to be consistent with what they're trying to do to improve a diverse workforce? You know, these are policy discussions for the board and the council to hash out. But just again, I'm just trying to throw that out there as a potential factor as well.
We did meet with GPFC this week, and so got a few opinions and kind of let them know what we were working on and considering. But yes, that's a really good point.
Like I said, I was just stepping in tonight. I haven't been tracking this issue as closely.
So it looks like at this point we'd have three alternatives. One would be obviously have the residence requirement or not have it. And the other one would be the point system. Is there any other ideas or any other ways to approach this problem?
I have a couple. They would definitely be less concrete in terms of like something like points. But some of the things that Cheryl's amazing team came up with were we could consider the residency requirement only applying to entry level jobs, for example. So we give City of Tacoma residents first dibs on jobs that help you enter the city. We could also, and this is a little bit more of a complicated process, but we could sort the eligible list when we give it to hiring managers to put City of Tacoma residents on top. And then, of course, we can always, we do a whole lot of education and outreach to the community already. We could review that with the board on a regular basis. I think you lost your quorum.
We're not going to make any formal resolutions or anything, so.
That's all it is? It's just the camera? Okay.
Okay. Oh, okay. So go ahead.
Okay, just making sure. So that was really it. So the last one was really sharing with you maybe on a quarterly or annual basis our recruiting and outreach plan and work that we do within the city already. We're regularly at events in the community like the Hilltop Street Fair. We work with the Asian Pacific Islander organization with Lua Pritchard. So we're all over that, trying to get people to know about us as an employer already and put a lot of effort there. So we could even share that with you on a regular basis. Those were our ideas.
Okay, now, is the hiring list, is that, that's a separate list or separate from the testing list that's formulated on the basis of, oh, okay. So when you put people on a, rank people on a list, that's actually a composite of, say, an oral interview and a written test and no?
No, typically it's, well, typically, it could take different forms. So typically it's a, they apply,
mm-hmm.
they take, well, there's usually a minimum qualification screening. Then they take the, if they pass that, they take the test, whatever that might look like. So for example, for our HR assistant position, it's a series of multiple choice questions to really determine their competencies for the job. Their score on that test, like 0 to 100, you have to get 70% in order to pass it, to be put on the eligibility or eligible list. And then once that those scores have been entered and the list has been ranked, so you're starting with the top 100% and down, the HR specialist in my office certifies that list is ready to be reviewed for hire. And you get a certain number of, I won't go too deep in this, you get a certain number of applicants to review because you get a certain number of ranks per the code. And I hope I didn't just make that way more complicated.
So the hiring is just simply based on your performance on the written test?
No. So what that does is get you first consideration. So if you were that person that got 100%, you and the ranks that were forward that are allowed per whatever kind of recruitment we're doing. So say like the top 10 candidates would then get passed on to the hiring authority. That person would review them and determine from that group who to interview.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
And then interviews would happen and yeah.
All right. I think we're, Member Wick, did you have any other comments or Board Member Klein?
I did just at least want to remind everybody that we also have the workforce equity study that doesn't support having this residency requirement from my perspective.
Need to review that. I think we're probably pretty close to doing all we can tonight. What do you all think? I think that's probably all we can do. And then obviously we're going to have Dan and Amy here, and they're going to have, I'm sure, some opinion on it. And then ultimately we can just vote on the issue, see what we want to do. Yes, is Shelby.
Is there additional information that you think the board would need or would like to consider before we, because now, I mean, if we introduce board members Sexton and Heller to the conversation, I feel like we're going to kind of need to recap our conversation.
Yeah.
Plus anything else that I can provide that might help with this decision making.
Can I get copies of whatever was given to the board today that I didn't receive?
Email those to you.
Thank you.
Before you summarize it, I have one other thing. And it was triggered by Vice Chair Wick's comment and also Jennifer's comment earlier about melding and supporting the goals of the city with equity and inclusion and diversity, typically major themes today of corporations and governments. Are there any explicit policy positions that the city council and the city has taken on that we need to make sure that we're factoring in so that if the professionals or society views a residency require as absolutely in conflict with that, then I think we need to come to terms with that rather than us blindly trying to find a solution and realizing that we're directly in violation of the city's policy in that area.
Our equity, well, first, we have a major anti-racist transformation effort going on in the city for all of our functions, including hiring. What we say, the short way to describe it, is that we aim to reflect the community that we serve. So Tacoma is a pretty darn diverse city. And so figuring out how we can recruit and retain individuals who reflect that, match that, those demographics, which, as you can imagine, is really hard to do in a limited pool of candidates. So that is a major focus, and I think that is what the council would probably repeat to the board in terms of an interest. It's that we want to reflect the community that we serve.
But uniquely in the case of the utilities and some of the other city functions, that community we serve is broader than Tacoma.
Exactly. Yeah, it is.
And I, well, yeah.
Yeah, we can talk more about that too.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, and I think there's, and I don't know what the statistics are, but I think a couple of people, board members, have mentioned that the pool would actually be more diverse if we limited it to Tacoma, and you're saying, no, that's not the case from your experience.
Well, because you can look at the demographics of the city of Tacoma, and it's pretty diverse. But you have to factor in how many of those people are actually available and ready to work, and available and ready to work in the fields that we are seeking applicants for. So there's a definite mismatch there. So from my perspective, the broader that we can open that up, the more diversity overall we'll actually get and have some choice in highly qualified folks as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you have any? Oh, did you? Oh, I'm sorry.
HR Director Fritz, as we mentioned the electrical engineers earlier, isn't it true that the entry-level electrical engineering position is classified?
I would have to get back to you on that. I'm not sure. I'm 99% sure it's a point of. I think there's an engineering technician.
Yeah, so just the point I was going to make in some of those kinds of positions, as we said earlier, there are not likely to be people in great quantities in Tacoma waiting to get employed.
Right.
Yeah, so we oftentimes think of the classified positions as fairly simple and straightforward jobs, but there are some jobs in the classified areas, and certainly like line electrician, that are very complex and require a pretty substantial certification and apprenticeship programs and those types of things. And like you said, we're trying to support that and do as much as we can in the city of Tacoma, but we're not producing enough of those people in Tacoma.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
Absolutely. The other thing is, just speaking of engineers, UW-Tacoma is just launching a civil engineering program. That's sort of our unicorn, well, one of our unicorn positions where we're having a hard time recruiting. And so if you happen to get somebody that's a well-qualified civil engineer, that's great. But there's not a lot of women yet in that field. I'm hoping that UW-Tacoma is focusing on the sort of diversity of its programs, but that's brand new here. So anytime we've been recruiting engineers in the past, they're typically going to come from Seattle or somewhere else. Again, that's an appointed position, but that it's an example of where it's hard sometimes to look at positions within a city when it's difficult to recruit even regionally for those types of positions, and especially to get a diverse pool.
And we've been concerned about diversity in the past, and that's a continuing concern of the board. Would you happen to have, I'm not asking you to generate data, but do you have some kind of data that's already been generated regarding the diversity of the pool, and also, how many city residents usually apply versus how many individuals from outside of the city are applying. And like I say, I don't want you to generate data. I mean, you've got other more important things to do, but if you do happen to have some data on those two issues, I think that might be helpful.
So when you get a chance, take a look at the packet that I gave you. Because it's got City of Tacoma current employee demographics by women and people of color. And these ones were in my previous presentation in 2020, and I just had them updated, so they're current. But some interesting ones in here are where our current employees lived at the time of application versus where they live now. And so I think there's other information in there you might find useful. Talks about education level, median household income, the Tacoma residents versus Pierce County residents. So just that gives you a little preview of kind of what we're facing in terms of the pools. So let me know if you have any questions on that too.
Okay, do you have any other comments from board members or members of the community or anybody else, members of the HR department?
I would just say, Chair, I really appreciate the way you set this up because I think it was very conducive to a good discussion rather than just looking at a PowerPoint. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I think we might need a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Move to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you all for your time and all your great ideas, and we'll see how this goes out when we vote on it. And we should be doing that. I think hopefully we'll have Board Member Heller and Sexton here next time, and maybe we can start to kind of wrap this issue up. All right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So we'll see if that works out better than this. Great. Well, thanks.
Bye-bye.